Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Kogal from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from several sources. The AARP Modern Maturity magazine. I've got something from the New York Times. I have something from Thrivent magazine. And also I'm going to be starting off with the UCLA Health newsletter. So I'm glad you're joining me. Welcome back. Well, we will get right started with Healthy Years, UCLA Health. Healthy Years, Helping Older Adults Lead Happier, Healthier Lives. And the front article is Worried About Senior Moments. I know I am. Dementia testing can help discern what is normal and what is not. Chances are you've walked into a room and suddenly forgotten what you were looking for. Or perhaps during a conversation, a certain word eluded you. Those episodes, often dubbed senior moments, are generally just temporary lapses in memory. If we compare people in their 20s with older people, the younger people will almost always do better on memory tests, explains neurologist Edmund Teng, MD, David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. Much of what we call senior moments might be more attentional or focus-related, or it could be processing speed. Information just can't be processed as fast as it used to be. Symptoms of something more. Trying to discern what is normal, age-related forgetfulness versus something more serious is not always a black-and-white issue. Small lapses in memory are generally no big deal. For example, not being able to recall a person's name upon seeing them, then remembering that name sometime later, is less likely to be of concern. The people who later remember things they've forgotten are more likely to be experiencing normal age-related memory changes, says Dr. Teng. It's the people who don't remember that they have forgotten things. That's when our level of suspicion goes up. Other instances that raise concern include repetitive questioning within a short period of time, getting lost on familiar routes, memory loss that affects daily function, falling for similar financial scams multiple times. Common memory tests. If you or your loved one experiences some of the above situations, the first step is to see a primary care doctor or a geriatric physician. That physician will typically do a short cognitive screening test before deciding whether to refer you to a specialist for more extensive memory testing. A common test called the mini-COG includes comprehension and recall. The patient is asked to draw a circle for a clock and to place the hands to reflect a specific time, such as 10 minutes after 11. For recall, the physician asks the patient to remember three unrelated words, such as chair, pineapple, and dust. Then, later during the exam, the physician will ask for those words to be recalled. The mini mental state exam, MMSE, is another commonly used assessment. It is a quick way to evaluate language function, attention, speed of processing, visual and visual-spatial contexts, and executive function. The test takes about 10 minutes. Like the mini-COG, the MMSE does not diagnose a specific underlying disease, but it can indicate if there are cognitive problems that warrant further investigation. The MMSE consists of a series of questions and tests. For example, orientation. What is today's date and season? Attention and calculation. Count backwards from 100 by sevens. Language. Look at a pencil and state out loud what it is. If these short exams suggest a potential problem, the physician may refer a patient to a specialist for further evaluation. Experts who diagnose and treat memory problems. Neurologists are medical doctors who specialize in diseases of the brain, spinal cord, and nerves. They are often consulted for neurological and memory problems related to such diseases as Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, and Alzheimer's. Neurologists have expertise in various regions of the brain and the roles those regions play in physical and mental functioning. Geriatric psychiatrists are also medical doctors. They specialize in distinguishing between physical and psychological causes of disorders in older adults. They are experts at dealing with memory problems that involve psychiatric issues such as major depression, anxiety, agitation, or delusions. Geriatric psychologists hold PhD degrees in psychology and specialize in psychological assessments and treatment of mental and nervous disorders in older adults. They focus on memory, competency, depression, and adjustment disorders, such as grieving the death of a loved one. Through testing and therapy, they can help patients with various psychological problems, including those associated with memory loss. Tests with these experts are more comprehensive, requiring about an hour and a half, and possibly multiple visits. The tests may include neuropsychological assessments, paper-based and conversational, to evaluate memory and various aspects of thinking. Diagnostic tests may also be ordered, such as blood tests, MRIs, and CT scans. Some medical illnesses and medications can impact a person's memory and cognitive function. That's why multiple tests may be needed to identify the causes of the symptoms. What you should know. According to the Alzheimer's Association, the following can help you distinguish an ordinary age-related change from a sign of Alzheimer's. Okay, signs of Alzheimer's: poor judgment and decision-making. Typical age-related changes: making a bad decision once in a while. Signs of Alzheimer's: inability to manage a budget. Typical age-related change: missing a monthly payment. Alzheimer's: losing track of the date and or season. Typical age-related: forgetfulness, forgetting which day it is, but remembering later. Signs of Alzheimer's: difficulty having a conversation. Typical age-related changes: sometimes forgetting which word to use. Signs of Alzheimer's: misplacing things and being unable to retrace steps to find them. Typical age-related changes: losing things from time to time. And here are memory changes as we age. Individual experiences vary, but there are common changes that can occur with aging. And memory does change throughout life. People often wonder if a memory lapse is age-related or something more serious. It's not always a clean divide, explains Dr. Tang. Because people live longer than they used to, it's more challenging to discern between normal and abnormal cognitive aging. Not all memory loss is normal. Progressively worsening memory loss, for example, is not healthy aging. Though everyone experiences mind and body aging differently, researchers have found some broad commonalities. Laura Germine, PhD, and her colleagues at Massachusetts General Hospital have researched how certain elements of memory and cognition peak at different times of life. Here is an overview of their findings. Age-related stages of memory. All right, in your 20s, brain development peaks. You can learn, reason, process, problem solve, and remember new information as quickly as you'll ever be able to do so. 30s, Learning, processing, reasoning abilities, and thinking speed gradually decline. Working memory, the ability to quickly call up information, peaks. 40s, cognitive function and memory are generally strong. Subtle changes in your ability to remember new information begin. Reasoning skills slow. The ability to multitask declines. 50s, mild forgetfulness sets in. Memory, processing skills, and the ability to learn new information gradually declines. Your ability to recall vocabulary and general knowledge improves. 60s, memory, processing skills, and other executive functions continue to decline. Comprehension of vocabulary and general knowledge stays stable. 70s, you have more trouble with working memory and information recall. It's harder to formulate concepts and think abstractly. Risk of dementia rises. 80s, trouble with both short-term and long-term memory increases. It's harder to remember everyday words and names. By age 85, nearly one out of three people has Alzheimer's disease changes in the brain. Try an online cognitive test. Testmybrain.org is an online, not-for-profit initiative dedicated to internet-based experiments that allow researchers to collect information and interested citizens to participate in science. Launched in 2008, it has collected data from 1.3 million volunteers from all over the world. Okay, well, our next article is going to be from the New York Times. How much protein should you eat each day? Well, during the summer season, when protein-rich burgers and steaks are sizzling on outdoor grills, you might be wondering, how much protein should an adult consume every day? Most dietitians consider these nutrients a building block of a healthy diet. Proteins, which are long chains of amino acids, are the basic components of tissues found in all human muscles and internal organs. Janelle Walter, a professor of family and consumer sciences at Baylor University in Waco, Texas, served up some advice on protein sources, portion sizes, fad diets, and a powerful pairing for vegetarians. The golden nutrient. Unlike carbohydrates or fats, proteins are the only nutrients that can be used to build new cells that can form tissue, said Dr. Walter, a registered dietitian. Our bodies, thanks especially to our livers, are protein-making machines, she said. But among the 22 amino acids found in proteins, 9 cannot be made by the body. These have to be supplied by food. And the best source of them is what we call a complete protein, which includes meat, chicken, fish, milk, or eggs, she said. A total of 8 ounces, or about 45 grams, is all an adult needs each day, she said. And the type of complete protein it comes from doesn't matter in a balanced diet that includes fruits, vegetables, and grains. Though plant proteins found in nuts, tofu, chickpeas, and other sources do contain amino acids, none have all of those 9 essential ones on their own. However, Professor Walter said, there is a magical combination. If you put a nut or legume with a grain product, they complement each other to give the body what it needs. But it takes 1.5 cups of rice and beans to equal the protein in 3 ounces of meat. You have to eat a heck of a lot of food if you get your protein from plants versus animal products, Dr. Walter said. Meat is just more efficient. A gram of meat has the same number of calories as a gram of carbohydrate, she said. And that does happen to be 4 grams. Iron and zinc. 2 meat patties, the size of the palm of an average adult's hand, are the right amount of protein to eat a day. Whether fresh, frozen, grilled, or even canned, any animal protein retains its nutritional value. Protein doesn't get destroyed or inactivated with cooking, freezing, or processing, Dr. Walter said. In a restaurant, an 18-ounce steak probably includes the bone, fat, and gristle before cooking. So the true serving is about 13 ounces, still more than one adult requires a day. Although at least one study has shown that eating grilled meat can cause cancer, you'd have to eat lots and lots of charred meat for a long time to get enough carcinogens to have a negative effect, Dr. Walter said. She is a big fan of shrimp, but eats all forms of animal proteins. She cooks meat thoroughly to avoid naturally occurring bacteria such as E. coli and Salmonella. Also, quote, the body can break down protein a little bit better when it's cooked, end quote, she said. Unlike fish, light-colored meat or plant foods, only red meat has the ideal balance of iron and zinc, which the body requires to be taken together in order to be absorbed by the digestive tract. You can supplement your diet to get the right balance, but you should do it with a dietitian, the professor said. Too much iron or zinc can cause abdominal pain or worse, she said. Dr. Walter also said that, despite pervasive myths, serving per serving of lean red meat has no more cholesterol than any other land animal. Dr. Walter sometimes refers patients to the USDA's meal planning site, choosemyplate.gov, which has diet plans based on age and activity level. For some reason, every drink and meal replacement bar claims it has extra protein, which we don't need, she said. People see protein as a magical nutrient with no side effects, which is way off target. And protein is not cheap. Overdoing it. Cooked red meat is the most efficient form of protein, but if you eat more than 8 ounces a day, it will be stored as fat, said Dr. Walter. Though the American carnivorous diet typically has more than enough protein than adults need. In countries without enough meat, she added, adolescents' growth often is stunted, which can't be reversed. In addition, their internal organs developed during that period may have fewer cells, which can cause problems much later in life, she said. For grown-ups, a phase of protein deficiency can lead to anemia, tissue not healing as quickly as normal, and difficulty fighting off infections. But all those can be addressed quickly by rebalancing one's eating, Dr. Walter said. She takes issue with fad diets that restrict carbohydrates in favor of proteins because the brain runs on carbs, and eliminating them can lead to dehydration. In addition, laying on the protein can tax the liver. People love to lose weight, but they often don't care where the pounds come from, she lamented. Wise words. And now, an article from Thrivent magazine. The right kind of support and comfort can make all the difference for someone who is grieving. Lean on Me by Stacy Freed. When Lori Hanser's husband, Marty, was diagnosed with gallbladder cancer, the family motto was, hashtag making lemonade, says Lori, a Thrivent member from North Hollywood, California. We needed to make the best of our time. That time was only 6.5 months from diagnosis until Marty's death on October 3, 2018. Marty had been a Lutheran pastor for 25 years, and he and Lori were both born and raised and living in Minnesota before they relocated to California for his job in 2016. We had a huge friend base, Lori said. While everyone in their lives cares about Lori and the couple's two grown daughters, she says that after Marty's death, she realized people, quote, sometimes didn't really know what to say or do and would say things that aren't really helpful. Many of us have been in this situation, so how do you support someone who is grieving? The most important thing is that family and friends should make the effort to be there for the journey and not assume the journey is 2 weeks or 2 months or even a year, says Thrivent member Dr. Debbie Baker, a clinical psychologist and programs director for the Community of Grief Center in Greeley, Colorado. It can be long-term, and you need to be there for them all along the way. There are specific things that people can do that are most helpful for those who are grieving. Power of words. Our society as a whole is not very comfortable with death. While death is a normal part of life, and we will all grieve, society is uncomfortable with people who grieve, wanting them to get over it quickly, Baker says. People will often stop talking about your loved one, thinking that saying their name will cause you pain. But the most beautiful word is the name of your loved one. It's helpful to those who are grieving to hear that name and share stories. Lori finds it comforting when people acknowledge that they, too, are grieving Marty's death, and then they talk about a particular good time they shared with him. At Marty's funeral, the bishop said, "Keep the stories coming," Lori says. "I love hearing the stories and memories, some of which I share and some I don't." Although people mean well, they do sometimes say the wrong thing. For example, it's not uncommon to hear, "I know how you feel," but you never really can understand what another person feels. Let the grieving person experience their own grief and say something like, "I understand this must be terrible." She also finds it helpful when people ask, "How are you doing today?" as opposed to the more general, "How are you doing?" If you ask, "How I'm doing," do you mean this minute, overall? "How are you doing today?" is manageable. Today might be a good day, but if I'm on the beach with friends one day, it doesn't mean I won't be curled up on my bed the next. The easiest thing to say to someone grieving, suggests Baker, is, "I'm sorry for your loss," or, "I'm sorry for your pain, but I don't know what you're going through." Then let the grieving person know you will walk alongside them and make the effort to do so. Open up and listen. It's not the job of friends and family to fix or heal a person who is grieving, says Thrivent member Steve Winther, a grief facilitator in a support group run by Bayside Church in Roseville, California. Winther, a licensed marriage and family therapist, and his wife, Kathy, lost their oldest son to cancer 6 years ago. To support someone, he says, create safe ground for the person and give them the opportunity to be heard and understood. We shouldn't preach to them or tell them what they should or shouldn't be doing. Just be present in silence. Ask that person what they need and how you can assist. They may just need you to be with them. And if they're comfortable, they may talk about their struggles, which can be therapeutic. We don't have to guide them down a particular path of thought or fill them with a mini sermon on what God's doing in all of this. It's just asking the Lord to help us to be what they need and running in tandem with them as they progress through their journey. Lori finds her faith to be helpful. I always believed that we will go on to something better. Marty believed that and preached that, she says. Marty was scared not for where he was going, but for us being left, here. I feel like he's taken care of. It's just us coping with this world. My beliefs are a strength I have to fall back on. Other ways to be supportive include sharing online. During her husband's illness, Lori found strength in what visitors to Marty's caringbridge.org page had to say. Another source is books for supporting someone who is grieving. Winther suggests the book entitled Recovering from Losses in Life by H. Norman Wright with a W, a Christian marriage, family, and child therapist. In the end, says Lori, it's the simple things that she finds most helpful, like saying, I'm here for you, I love you, or let me know how I can help. And Stacy Fried is a writer in Pittsford, New York. And here are some tips from Steve Winther. If you are grieving, have a support network around you. They are people who will check in on you and help you with everything from mowing a lawn to helping with meals to listening and being present. Speak with a professional counselor or attend a grief program. You may find it helpful to go to a professional who understands the manifestations of the grief process and may have suggestions and resources to help you on your grief journey. A lot is trial and error. Seek pastoral guidance. This type of counseling can help you stay focused on God's presence in your life. Keep yourself healthy. It may be difficult at first, and you may have to force yourself to do some things you don't want to do, but it's important to do what you can to keep your immune system healthy. Eat well, get enough sleep, take a walk. These things can boost your ability to stay in a healthy place physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Annika Gall, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time, if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Make it a great week. See you next time.